live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
I hit this thing really, really hard yesterday. I gave you my thoughts on the reinstatement of DJ Durkin. And then the Maryland Board of Regents announced that he is not. Well, actually, the school announced he is no longer the head coach. First, they reinstated him. And as for that announcement, the Board of Regents, the school, the athletic department, they took an enormous amount of criticism, an enormous amount of heat when they brought him back. You know, criticism for how gutless it was, criticism for how callous it was, criticism for the flat-out stupidity in bringing back a coach who oversaw a toxic program, a coach who had a player die on his watch, a death that was entirely preventable. So they reverse course, or at least University President Wallace Lowe reversed course. He announced in a statement that DJ Durkin had been fired as head coach of Maryland. So the Board of Regents brought him back. Lowe fires him. Exactly what changed in that one day? What changed? I mean, aside from anyone and everyone associated with that decision to bring him back getting crucified, what changed? Well, actually, that was pretty much it. Because 24 hours earlier, the chair of the Board of Regents was telling everybody how awesome DJ Durkin was, how awesome he was, and the fact that he was actually a victim and that he was the one who was treated unfairly. They couldn't wait to reinstate this guy and let him get back to doing what he did, namely making players watch vids of eyeballs getting drilled out, serial killers and animals killing other animals. Now, I would say that they could not have handled that any worse than they did, but knowing how they did handle this, give them some time. I'm sure they'll find a way to jack it up even further. And then the obvious question, do they deserve credit for making the right decision? And the obvious answer, hell no, none. No credit for doing the right thing when it should have been done so much sooner. They had months to make the right decision. They had months to review the conditions under which Jordan McNair suffered and died an entirely preventable death. They had months to interview everyone involved with that program. Months to learn about the physical and psychological abuse that was taking place in that program. They had months to write a report. And they used all that time to come to a decision that was wrong in every single way. So no, you don't get credit. You don't get credit for changing your mind to what you should have done all along. This crew of dopes and scumbags looked at a report that said the head coach was signing off on screening videos of serial killers and drills going into eyeballs during breakfast. They looked at that report and said, yep, that's our man. That's our guy. Bring him back. I mean, normal people would hear that or see that report and decide that somebody like that should not be around student athletes, should not be around our kids. The Maryland Board of Regents saw that same report and decided that's the second highest paid employee in the state. So sure, it's never too late to do the right thing. So I'm glad they finally got around to it, but they get zero credit for getting around to it. Because they didn't do it because they thought it was the right thing. They didn't want to do it at all. They did it because they had to. They did it because they were getting hammered by everybody. They did it because they stupidly underestimated the backlash in bringing this guy back. In other words, everyone knew that Maryland was doing the wrong thing except for Maryland itself. So when they now reverse direction and they finally get around to doing the right thing, it's better than doing the wrong thing, but barely. And don't be looking for any credit because you're not going to get any. The DJ Durkin situation was not about Maryland's football program. It was about Maryland as a university. In other words, are they a university with a football team or a football team with a school attached? And if you ask the Board of Regents, it was the latter. And then on top of that, you have a source telling ESPN that DJ Durkin was, quote, surprised by the decision. Hey, listen, I get that. You may think the fact that he was surprised that he got broken off shows how little he gets anything, but I disagree. Because on Tuesday, he had the Board of Regents hyping him and saying that Durkin was the victim. So if I'm DJ Durkin and I hear that, I'd be thinking, man, I got this. I got it made. These people don't give a bleep. They're going to back me no matter what. He probably was surprised. And then 24 hours later, he got fired. Again, the right decision, but one that everybody associated with making it gets no credit for. Like this, for instance, if you had a test in school with the wrong answer and it gets graded, and then you write the correct answer over the wrong answer, you don't get credit for that. That's what this was, a test. A test, and the leaders at Maryland all failed. They failed Jordan McNair in life. They failed him in death. And you shouldn't need the student body, the faculty, the deans, local politicians, literally everybody on planet Earth to tell you that. So, thanks for doing the right thing after trying like hell to do the wrong thing. Now, let's never, ever talk about Maryland football ever, ever again. Let that be the end of it. We are joined by a good friend of the program, Chris Mannix. Chris, what's up? How are you?
I'm good, Jim. How you doing?
Good, good, bud. First things first, let me start with the big news. The announcement came official yesterday. After 3 years with Yahoo, you are going back home. You're going back to Sports Illustrated. How does it feel to be back with SI?
Oh, it feels great. I went to Yahoo. It was an incredibly tough decision to go to Yahoo in the first place. When I went, Adrian was there. We had the whole kind of vertical staff sort of put together, and in the last year, it changed. I mean, Woj left to go to ESPN. The whole, I was literally the last, vertical staffer left at Yahoo. So when this opportunity, came up, I jumped on it.
All right. So what's going to happen with your podcast? Are you going to keep doing those now that you're back with SI?
Oh yeah, I'm going to rebrand the NBA podcast and the boxing podcast. We'll keep doing those. One early in the week and one later. So all that stuff, everything I did at Yahoo will continue over at SI.
Good, good. Good for you. Congrats. Chris Mannix joining us. All right, Chris, getting back to the NBA, we're about 7 or 9 games into the NBA season, roughly a tenth of the season. As you look around, what are some of the things that stand out to you the most in the early going? What are your early thoughts?
Well, I mean, it's tough to really cement any opinions. And you're having Dwayne Casey on in the next hour. I mean, Detroit for the first 4 games looked great. The last 2, not so much. So there's a lot of fluidity to it all. I would say that I think Milwaukee has really started to distinguish itself as a team that is going to be a threat to win the East. Mike Budenholzer is the linchpin for them, and he really has been incredible. And to the point where you might even say that Mike Budenholzer is Milwaukee's Steve Kerr, in the sense that he took over for Jason Kidd, who took them to a certain point. In the same way that Steve Kerr took over for Mark Jackson, Budenholzer is just a different level coach, and putting him in that mix has made them better. But they made some really nice roster moves in the offseason. Brook Lopez gives them another shooter. Ersan Ilyasova gives them another shooter. A lot of people coming into the season, myself included, thought it was Boston-Toronto in kind of a street fight for who comes out of the East. But I think Milwaukee is injecting itself in there, and and how they played early on has been a really pleasant surprise.
We're talking to Chris Mannix. All right, so stay right there. What about Toronto? Toronto is 7-1 right now. What do you make of how the Raptors have adapted to life with Kawhi Leonard, and how do they look?
Oh, I mean, seamlessly. The only game they lost, Kawhi didn't play in. And I had somebody in that organization tell me recently that, everyone kind of knows their role. I mean, Kawhi stepped into that DeMar DeRozan role, so, he was allowed and was comfortable with playing and being a big-time scorer and taking end-of-the-game shots. Those bench guys, that might be the most unheralded but impressive bench in the league, with some of the guys they bring off it. Not household names like Van Vliet and Ananobi when he's coming off the bench, and Siakam when he's coming off the bench, and Dellen Wright when he's coming off the bench. But they're really good, and they know exactly what they're supposed to do, and they know how to play with each other. So, assuming there isn't an injury, I think that team is going to be right there fighting with Boston for the number one seed. And, it's incredibly important, Jim, to get that number one seed. I mean, it seems kind of funny to talk about it right now, but, Boston probably isn't in the conference finals last year if they don't get that number one seed. I mean, that home court advantage, I think, is going to be incredibly valuable in the Eastern Conference.
Thursday's Daily Jungle is brought to you by Bethesda Game Studios, the award-winning creators of Skyrim and Fallout 4. They welcome you now to Fallout 76, the online prequel where every surviving human is a real person, work together or not to survive. Under the threat of nuclear annihilation, you will experience the largest, most dynamic world ever created in the legendary Fallout universe. Reclamation Day 2102. 25 years after the bombs fall, you and your fellow vault dwellers, chosen from the nation's best and brightest, emerge into post-nuclear America. You can play solo, or you can join together as you explore, quest, build, and triumph against the wasteland's greatest threats. Fallout 76 will be available worldwide on Wednesday, November 14th. Pre-order now at participating retailers and play the beta. Games play best on Xbox One. Chris Mannix joining us once again. All right, so what about Boston? It's early. They're 5-2. They got kind of off to a slow start offensively. How do they look to you right now, and what kind of team do you think they're going to be going forward?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of their games. You know, they're going to be fine. It's, you know, they're definitely still trying to figure out how to play with each other. I think they're still deferring to some degree when guys are out on the floor with each other, because they want to show that they're not selfish and they can make it work with this much talent on the roster. Kyrie got off to a slow start. He wasn't really in shape coming into the season. Some of that's understandable. I mean, he's coming off a knee surgery that got him back on the court mid-summer, but he's starting to round into shape. And, you know, the Tuesday night game where he just went off is certainly a good sign for things to come. I mean, they're going to be an incredibly dangerous offense. I just want to see him play even better defensively. I think they've been impacted in some ways by some of the rule changes, the points of emphasis about allowing more freedom to players going to the paint. But a lot of teams are affected by that. They're going to be a top-tier team, Jim, that is going to be just almost unstoppable some nights offensively.
We're talking basketball. Chris Mannix. All right, Chris, you spent some time with Golden State on their trip through New York and Brooklyn. The Warriors, of course, have played a lot of games together over the past few years. It would seem like this could be a season where the strain would start to show. Are you seeing any sign of that at all?
No, it's the exact opposite. You know, when you talk to the advanced scouts that watch a lot of these games, you know, multiple scouts have told me that, you know, they think Golden State is playing a freer brand of basketball and looks like they enjoy playing with each other more than they have at any point during the Durant era. I don't know what you chalk that up to. I had one scout speculate that maybe they understand this could be the last year for Durant. They're just going to enjoy every game they have left. But they're clicking, and they're in sync. And, you know, Klay Thompson, you know, going off the other night was kind of the only blemish they had on their resume in the early season, his shooting struggles. But Durant and Curry are completely in sync with how they're playing together on the floor. Really, the only way you can kind of impact them is to be physical with them at times. But, you know, that strategy goes out the window in like January, February, when they bring DeMarcus Cousins back into the mix. So I don't know. I mean, it's fun to watch the regular season early. There's plenty of storylines, but you know, when you boil it all down, there isn't a team out there, I think, can touch Golden State in 4 out of 7 in either conference.
Well, not Houston, right? At least not right now. What do you make of them starting 1-5? And how big of a concern is that?
I mean, their offense is a mess, and some of that has to do with, you know, Harden's injury and not playing with Chris Paul quite as much as he certainly will as the season progresses. But, you know, it just goes back to the belief that they should have spent what they need to spend to keep that team together in the offseason. I mean, they were up 3-2 on Golden State. I know Trevor Reeves, they got a massive one-year deal, one-year $14 million from the Phoenix Suns. But, you know, if you really want to challenge, I think you had to really appreciate what he meant to that team, not just in terms of shooting, but locker room leadership and, you know, being versatile defensively. I mean, there's a lot Trevor Ariza brought to the table, and not having him there, I think is pretty impactful for that group. So, you know, they'll be better, you know, as they get healthier. But I believe coming into the season, Jim, that they took a step back this year. I have not seen anything to change my opinion early on.
We're talking to Chris Mannix, and we'll do so for a few more moments. So, Chris, Rick Pitino has been making some noise of late that he would like to coach again, and he would like to do it in the NBA. Any chance anybody gives him that opportunity, and what's your reaction to him thinking that or wanting that?
Yeah, not surprising. I mean, a coach wants to coach, and Rick Pitino has no future in college basketball because of what he did and you know, how he comported himself during his time there. I don't know. I don't think there'll be, I would say minimal interest in Rick Pitino, very minimal interest, to the point where you might have to find an exceptional situation with a owner that is enamored with bringing in Rick Pitino. I mean, I was in Boston working for the Celtics gym when he was there coaching that team. He didn't have a great understanding of what it meant to be an NBA coach when it came to, you know, rotations, how you talk to players, how you run practices, and just the general, you know, gamesmanship of the NBA. I mean, Brad Stevens is a former college coach, but what separates Brad Stevens is I think he has a great strategic mind. I never really saw that in Rick Pitino. And look, that was, what are we looking at, 17 years ago now? So is it going to get any better? To me, Jim, if Rick Pitino is really serious about being an NBA coach, he calls up a Billy Donovan or somebody that he has a close relationship who's a head coach right now and says, can I be an assistant on your staff? Can I work for you and prove that I'm a capable NBA coach? Now, I don't think that'll happen because his ego is just too big. But if he was really serious about getting back into the NBA, he would take an assistant coaching position. He would be that developmental guy that he claims to be. He would really, you know, humble himself and take one of those positions on somebody's staff to prove to the league that he can do it.
Hmm. Chris, one last thought. Derrick Rose had 50 last night, and given the physical struggles that he's had, it would be easy to think that in terms of that's an amazing comeback. But at the same time, he's been accused of rape, and the appeal for the civil case is being heard this month. How does all that impact what happened last night?
It has to play into it. And, you know, I haven't read, you know, too many, you know, glowing Derrick Rose stories. Derrick Rose is back. I mean, I don't want to hear the phrase overcoming adversity when it comes to Rose, because he certainly has physically. But, you know, that civil rape trial, I mean, it was in New York, and Rose was in New York at that time, and so I covered it pretty extensively. And all people have to do is go back and read some of that testimony, and it's cringeworthy to some degree. So, look, credit the player for showcasing the type of perseverance you have to keep coming back from knee surgery after knee surgery. I acknowledge that Tom Thibodeau was the right coach for him to link up with, because Tom Thibodeau, maybe more than any coach in Derrick Rose's career, has had unflinching faith in him. But you can't write the Derrick Rose story without acknowledging what happened a couple of years ago and the fallout from that, which is, you know, frankly, pretty disgusting.
There's an absolutely amazing weekend ahead of football. So if you want to get in on the action, get to MyBookie. Remember this, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. This is why I tell my people to bet with MyBookie. Trust me, they are the best bet this season. They've been in business for years. They have great reviews online, and their mobile site is very easy to navigate. Lay down some cash, win big right now. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. This is why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. And they have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code ROME to activate that offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. Do not forget to use the promo code ROME when creating your account to get that bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. Meantime, I want to quickly talk about Cleveland sports. It's been a tough week. In fact, a disastrous week in Cleveland sports. And when I say a disastrous week for Cleveland, if you say that, what are you talking about? It's like the Titanic crashing into the Hindenburg while somebody fell asleep at Chernobyl. That kind of bad. How bad? The Cavaliers gassed Ty Lue after only 6 games, a world championship, 3 Eastern Conference finals. Do not let the door hit you on the way out. The team then chases that by announcing that Larry Drew is their interim head coach. Larry Drew made it very clear, no, I'm not. His first order of business was to say, oh, no, I'm not. I mean, what a circus. But even that is relegated to the side stage compared to the uncontrollable blaze burning across town at Browns HQ. Hugh is gone after failing in 37 of the 40 weeks that he was on that job. Todd Haley is gone after only 8 weeks on that job. And while there was some question as to who would take charge of that team before Jimmy Haslam finally gets the hell out of the way and lets John Dorsey do his job, the interim gig is in the hands of none other than Greg Williams. Greg Williams. Three G's, one lozenge, and maybe the all-time worst brand in today's NFL. That's not what you want your brand to be right now. Not in today's NFL. But don't tell Greg that. Don't tell Greg three G's, one lozenge that. Because that dude took the mic yesterday, and as I mentioned, he threw down a virtuoso performance. I'm not sure I have ever seen so much confidence in one dude. Period. You almost have to respect it. No qualification. This is confidence and swagger personified. An absolute power performance. Nobody anywhere is happier to be who they are than Greg, three G's and one lozenge is. He sat down behind that mic at a presser. You know, and that's almost always awkward, right? The guy who brought you in is out. You take his gig, and it's always awkward. This dude, however, was not in any way awkward or embarrassed. There was nothing weird about it for him. My man may as well have kicked up his feet, lit up a stogie, and just said, shoot, hit me. What do you got? Whatever you want. I watched all 20 glorious minutes, so you don't have to. But just so you get a taste, listen to this dude. Listen to the way he opens up that sesh.
Never a dull moment in the National Football League. And when you've been in it as long as I have been in it, it's not the first time I've been through something like this, okay? And it is what it is.
Step one, charm and disarm. Crack a lukewarm joke. Remind everybody that you've been there. You've done that. And then hit the room with one of the all-time great lines of nonsense. It is what it is.
It is what it is.
Man, I hate that line. I hate that line. I remember the first time I heard that line. It is what it is. And I remember thinking, that's pretty interesting, actually. It is what it is. And then I heard that line every single day, 500 times a day for the past 15 years.
It is what it is.
And now there's no line that I hate more than that line.
It is what it is.
It is what it is.
It is what it is.
You know what? In retrospect, it really makes no sense at all. But after hearing Triple G drop it from the opening salvo, I know it's not going anywhere. I literally can't conduct an interview with anybody anymore without somebody saying at least once. So if you can't beat them, you might as well join them. I've got it locked and loaded for this weekend. The Rome Family Adventure in Wisconsin. If Jake or Logs hits me with any kind of blowback this weekend, I'm going to bust them up with, it is what it is,
it
son.
It is what it is.
It is what it is, son. Then my man settles in, and then he gets really comfortable. He gives Hugh a nice little bit of credit, pays Todd Haley a nice compliment, something that Hard Knocks cameras never ever found or caught. And then he started name dropping like a boss, like Bill Belichick. Couldn't wait to get that name out.
You know, another very close friend of mine in the league is Bill Belichick. How many times have you heard him say that? Do your job. Okay, it's about all of us, everybody in this building, doing our job.
That's so awesome. I mean, why not just say that? Why did you have to name check him? Why not just say, it's all about doing your job. Do your job. Do your job. You know, one of my really good friends in this business, Bill Belichick, says, do your job. And on top of that, that friendship doesn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense, right? The Hood and Triple G are friends. They're boys. I mean, I guess they do have something in common. They both have run afoul with the commish. And one of them thinks that he is the greatest coach on the planet, while the other might actually, in fact, be the greatest coach on the planet. But Triple G, my man, not only was he not done, he was just getting started. And after dropping my guy Andy Reid's name nice and casually like 20 different times, he starts to feel questions. And the most obvious one came right out of the gate. And Triple G's answer is one for the ages. This is an all-timer.
On your future, possibly as a head coach, is this in a way an addition for yourself, where you're looking in your own mind to see if this is something you still want to do?
You know, that's a legitimate question. You know, since I left Buffalo, I've had 11 letters sent in to interview for head coaching jobs, and in all of them behind the scenes, I have. and I have, and four of them I didn't even have to show up, just signed a contract and come.
Wait, what? Did you hear what that guy just said? Just when you thought the idea of Triple G in the hood, spending summers in Cape Cod, seemed like something of a stretch, he throws out that absolute whale. Quote, since I left Buffalo, I had 11 letters to interview for head coaching jobs, and all of them behind the scenes I have. Four of them didn't even have to interview. Just show up and sign the contract and come. All right, so 11 teams wanted to interview this dude. More than one-third of the NFL actually considered letting this guy be the face of their franchise. And four of these teams went as far as to offer him without even needing him to show up and interview. Like, yo, man, don't even bother getting on that plane. You're our guy. We know what you're about. Just sign on the line that's dotted. You be our head coach. But he wasn't about that life. He was not about that life. No, I'd rather stay here as an assistant than be a head coach for you. A head coach where I don't even have to interview. I mean, this dude's greatest hits album already has enough tracks on it to go platinum. But Triple G claiming that he's been turning down head coaching jobs left and right so he could stay in Cleveland and be D coordinator for Hugh Jackson might be even better than him saying, affect the head. Yeah, now I appreciate you offering me that head coaching job. I think I'd rather stay and be an assistant for a 1-31 team and make less. I'd rather just stay here and affect the head. That is incredible. Incredible. It's been 15 years since he was a head coach when he laid down that 17-31 record. But if you ask Triple G, he gets offers every single year. And they're offers. They're not interviews. They're offers. He's just waiting for the right opportunity. And if you're listening to him, it sounds like he's saying that the right opportunity is right here and right now. So there's dressing for the job you want, and then there's addressing the media for the job you want. And while I'm putting this dude's odds of making this interim job permanent at somewhere right around 0%, the way this guy was rocking the mic, dominating that presser, and owning it makes me think that he thinks the Browns are already his. I don't know, maybe he does have talent on both sides of the ball. I've got no idea what the next 8 weeks are going to look like with Triple G back at the helm of a franchise. Probably pretty scary, but I'll be straight. The pressers are going to be amazing. And now suddenly, although this guy was a part of one of the worst scandals ever in the league on the field, I can't wait to see what happens. Even if his brand is Affect the Head. Clones, give me a second so I can talk to you about Ferguson. Listen to this. No matter how big or small your team is, Ferguson has a winning game plan for pro contractors with thousands of plumbing repair parts, knowledgeable associates, and the largest national footprint in the game. When the pressure is on, you can count on Ferguson. Eric Musselman is my guest. Muss, it is great to have you back in the jungle. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. It's awesome to come back in the jungle.
Eric, it is so good to have you here. I've got to ask you, a few days away from the season opener, you and the program are getting a ton of hype, understandably so, deservedly so. So let me first start right there. How is life for the Musses and the Wolfpack?
It's changed dramatically since making a Sweet 16. And obviously, the biggest thing really, Jim, is just how do we get our players to focus on the task at hand? And, when you go from a Sweet 16 and kind of come out of nowhere from a national standpoint, then you have three players put their name in for the NBA draft, and then those three guys come back, the hype train, kind of starts. And it's been a summer with a lot of national people coming in and out, articles and TV things. But having said that, now we got to get down to business. I mean, we have a really difficult game opening night at home against BYU, and then this whole process starts. And I think the biggest thing is, how do you get your student athletes to understand that these games in November carry a ton of weight once you get to Selection Sunday? And that's one of the things that we continually talk to our team about from an educational standpoint with our young student athletes.
Eric Musselman joining us. They open up against BYU on November 6th. Eric, the three guys that you mentioned, Caleb Martin, Cody Martin, Jordan Caroline, they could have all gone to the NBA last season, but they do decide to come back to school. What's it mean to you and the program for them to come back? And then how did you help them navigate that process? You've been in the NBA. You've coached in the NBA. You know what was awaiting them there. How did you approach it with them?
I think that, you know, the biggest thing really, Jim, is Caleb and Cody, both Martin twins, they had already graduated before they started the process. And so it was really interesting because Caroline was only two classes away, and so he could have been a grad transfer. And so some of my friends in the business were calling and saying, hey, are you going to lose these guys to grad transfer if they come back? And it never even entered our mind. It never even entered the three players' minds. And I think that, you know, that's such a compliment to our university, to the program, that did not come into play with these guys at all. It was either NBA or back to the pack. But what we tried to do, Jim, is every time they went on a workout, we tried to call the NBA team prior to the workout, find out who they were going against, find out exactly or at least what they would tell us that they were going to do in the workout or in the individual meetings that they have with the guys so that we could prepare them for that. And then once the workout was done, not only did I call every team, each of the three assistant coaches were mandated to find somebody on that particular NBA organization that we could get feedback. And so we put together a comprehensive report of what we heard from the NBA people, because obviously the players were asking themselves when they were face-to-face with the NBA people. And so I think that once they saw that we had exact examples of what was said in an interview or exact examples of what had happened, that maybe a coach had put them through a drill and that they had struggled or succeeded at, I think that they understood that what we had was 100% the truth for them. And then they made the decision. Hey, they had an awesome year last year. They loved it. They loved college. And hey, let's go back and try to see if we can take this thing farther than we did last year.
Last year was Sweet 16. This year, they preseason top 10. They open up against BYU. Eric Musselman is the head coach at Nevada. You know, Eric, you and I go back a long, long way, as I mentioned. There was a time when you were choosing between joining the T-Wolves staff and joining the staff at LSU, knowing your respect and love for Flip. I can't imagine that was an easy decision, but you go to the college route instead. Why was that, and did you ever think that it would turn out the way it has?
Well, it was like a career defining moment. Obviously, I had not known Johnny Jones at all, who was then the head coach at LSU. I had never been to Baton Rouge in my life, and LSU had offered the position. Flip Saunders, who had obviously played for my dad, and then we had worked together in the minor leagues, and that was my idol growing up. I wore Flip Saunders' uniform number. I wanted to shoot jump shots like he shot them. His father, Flip's father, actually built me, because his dad was a carpenter, built me my first basket that I ever took shots on when we were living in Ohio. And it was really my wife and my two sons more so than me. I felt the pull to go to Minnesota. You know, I'd lived there at a young age. My dad was the first coach of the Timberwolves. And not only was Flip there as the head coach and part owner and involved in their management, but Sam Mitchell was an assistant coach and Sidney Lowe. And both those guys had played for my father so with the Timberwolves. And so I had Flip calling and Sam and Sidney. And it was really difficult, but I have a strong wife. And she said, hey, look, we spent 2 years at Arizona State. Let's continue down this college path and see where it leads us. And I tried to be realistic, Jim, and say to myself, I don't think that I'm going to get another NBA head job unless I go and be an assistant coach for 5 or 6 years, because I had had two cracks as an NBA head coach. And very few people, when you look at the history of the NBA, ever get a third crack. And so I knew that I wanted to be a head coach again at some level, and we felt that from a family standpoint, that would be the best direction was to go to the collegiate level.
Eric Musselman joining us. It really is amazing, Eric, the way it's played out. But you kind of willed this thing in a way the way you always have. Tim Layden wrote a piece for you that's up right now for SI that is an amazing read. And there are very few people in this business that are more respected than Tim Layden, Eric. So when he shows up to profile you, you know good things are happening. One of the focuses on the article was how much your program is a reflection of you and your legendary father, Bill, who we're talking about right now. How much pride do you take in that?
I mean, you know, when I read the article, truth of the matter is I was actually getting a haircut the other day, and I teared up, and I actually got out of the barber chair and said, "Hey, I got to use a restroom real quick," because I didn't want the barber to see me tearing up. And he did an incredible job. Tim did, and the ironic thing, and what makes I think the piece so interesting, Jim, is Tim had covered my dad when my dad was coaching the Albany Patroons when he was really young. And when he first came in, he started telling me stories about my dad. And then he went and interviewed a couple of the players. And I called my wife and I said, "Hey, I don't know how this is going to work out," because my dad got into it with Tim a couple times. But it was a great piece. And I think he really enjoyed the time being around the program. And I think he saw that, like, we're really having fun doing this. And our players are having fun. We're grinding. We're working. But behind closed doors, it really is a true family, and we got each other's backs, and we have fun on a daily basis. And I think that's why our guys play so hard.
You know, I reached out to him, Eric, Tim Layden, and I said, it's a great piece. I've known Eric a long, long time. And he said, yeah, you and your dad. And he texted, or he direct messaged this to me, something along the lines of, they're very, very similar, but Eric's having a lot of fun. The program's having a lot of fun. You know, it's just a different time. But Layden wrote in the piece that there are a few people that really approached it the way your dad did, and that he would stay up late at night and he would text his assistant or call his assistant coaches, that you're similar, but you will text. What is it? You and your dad, I've never seen guys that are so in love with the sport itself. What is that? How do you explain that? And the sport of basketball, what did it mean to you and your dad together?
Well, I mean, that was my bond, you know, growing up, Jim. It was basketball. It was going on road trips. It was, Mom, as soon as school's out, take me to dad's practice. And you know, so there's just so many hours that, I mean, I remember sitting in Williams Arena for 2-hour practice, and then we'd go back to his office. And at that time, it was the old projector film. So I struggle around my house. You know, if I have to screw in a light bulb, I probably can't do it. Basketball is what I love. And I just, you know, my dad was my idol. He was my best friend. I wanted to emulate him. And so all those reasons, I didn't really have any other avenue that I thought that I could turn to. And so I think it's really just a love of the game. And then I think the fun part of it, is really the fact that, I had to reinvent myself. I had to reinvent my career. It was not easy. Obviously, when I was climbing up the ladder and at a young age, coaching 23 years old as a minor league coach, and then you go to the NBA and you're coaching the Warriors, and then you get fired from that. You go do a 2-year stint with Memphis, and then you bounce right back with Sacramento as a head job. Up until that point in my life, coaching and everything was really easy. But then when you get fired, you have to reflect and you have to sit back. There was a time at a very young age where I was saying, I don't know what's going to happen with my career. And so I think being fired really, really humbled me, Jim. And then I always had said, when I get back to that head chair, I'm going to have fun. And I did that with the Lakers D League team, and certainly did it with the teams that I coached internationally, Venezuela and Dominican Republic national team. But now being on a college campus, there's so much more than just wins and losses. And I don't know if I would have had this much fun 10 or 15 years ago.
Eric Musselman, my guest. It's a whole different animal on the college level. Look, Eric, I know you as much as anybody. It's just locked in on what you have to get done right now, day to day, hour to hour, practice to practice. So what about the NBA? Is it still in the back of your mind, or could you see yourself coaching college for the rest of your career?
Yeah, I could, Jim. I love where I'm at. I love a 30-game season. Player at this stage of my career or life or whatever, like player development, seeing guys get better. Like our guys this year, they have to get better. or else we're not doing a good enough coaching job, whether it's a three-point shooter who increases his three-point percentage by 8 percentage points, or whether it's a guy who's struggling from the foul line. Our job is to make these guys better basketball players. And at the pro level, it's more of a you got to improve them, but it's more of a scheme thing. And the 82-season grind. And I love going to our football games. I love hanging out with our baseball coach. And it's just a more family-oriented situation. But, yeah, competitively, we are grinding. And along with the fun, it's all about, you know, how do we win the next game? And I, you know, I think that there's so much about coaching and leadership that you want to continue to learn on a daily basis as well.
Sarek, last night, you've talked a lot about family. You mentioned that your dad was your idol, your dad was your best friend. Family's that important. I can remember when you took some time away from it and you stayed home and you coached your kids' AAU teams. All of a sudden, now your son, Michael, is a graduate assistant with you. What's that experience been like for both of you?
We'd have to stick him on the phone to find out his version of it.
right?
But my version of it is, I walked in the other day, I sat at my desk, I worked for about 5 minutes, and I said, holy smokes, my son is in the other room, and I didn't even say good morning to him.
Right.
But it's incredible. I think that, you know, I got divorced, was not with my son 7 days a week. It affects you. This is now, you know, time that was lost. And when you're coaching and you're traveling, you automatically lose games. I was not at every one of his high school games. Now I'm able to be with him every single day. He's traveling. He's learning, you know, the craft of coaching. I think he's loving it. It's in our blood. And, you know, the 1 year that I worked with my dad with the Timberwolves, the greatest year that I've ever had, now that he's gone and he's no longer with us. And so hopefully many, many years from now, my son will be able to remember this. Hopefully his you know, evaluation of the situation is at least similar to what I'm having.
Eric, I'm trying to let you go, but a final thought. So if Bill were still around, I mean, would he be blowing you up all night long, talking you through this? Would you put him on the staff? And what would he make of what you've done at Nevada?
Well, you know, it's so interesting because I, you know, here's this, you know, coach that I've had on this pedestal, you know, my whole life. And you know, his teams at the University of Minnesota, they won Big Ten championships, but they never made a Sweet 16. And then they weren't, to my knowledge, ranked in the top seven in the country at any point. And so I think back and I'm like, I can't believe this is happening, because this guy that I thought was the world's greatest coach, we're kind of doing stuff that didn't happen with him. And it's been such an incredible ride. But when I was coaching, when I first started my career, my dad would come to practice, and he would inevitably every day that he was at a practice would say, hey, can I talk to your team for a couple minutes? And that, I thought a couple minutes meant a couple minutes, and it would go on for 30 minutes. But he taught me so much energy, effort, enthusiasm, and I'm sure that he would be blowing me up even at halftime of games with text messages on things that I'm screwing up. And I know for a fact that he's looking down and saying, why do you guys take so many stupid three-point shots, and why are you trying to play so fast? Because his teams were the exact opposite philosophically.
It starts once again on November 6th. In fact, it's going to be right here on CBS Sports Network. Nevada is going up against BYU, a tough opening matchup. They are ranked number 7 in the preseason AP poll. They're coming off a Sweet 16 season. You know, Eric, you and I mean, we could have this conversation for another hour easy. One day you got to come on the podcast. We can really stretch it out, but I don't even know what to say. I mean, we do go way, way back. I know what you've put into this. I know how you rebuilt yourself. I know how you reinvented yourself. It is amazing to see what you and that program is getting done there in Nevada. So I know it's a big year for you. Always good to have you on, Eric. Great to get caught up.
JR, thanks for having me. I'd love to come on the podcast. I can't thank you enough for the friendship. I mean, all these years, it's been a I don't know how many years I've come on with you, and it's such great exposure for our program, and can't thank you enough for the friendship.
Now, you'd think that after 11 championship parades in 18 years, the city of Boston would either be bored or they would know exactly what the hell they're doing and get through the day without any incident. You would think that, but you'd be wrong, because neither of those things were true yesterday. Number one, the city sure as hell is not bored with winning. And why would they be? Winning is awesome. Just take everybody else's word for it. Seattle Mariners and New York Mets. Winning is pretty awesome. And so is ditching work or class to pack the streets on a weekday to celebrate your squad. Awesome. It's as good as it gets. However, you put a couple of 100,000 chouds on the street and you're going to get some incidents. Some good, some bad, some ugly. You know me, I'm a positive guy. Let's start with the good. In fact, why don't we start with the legendarily good? Why don't we start with the verbal body bag that Alex Cora zipped up the Yankees in yesterday? It's one thing to win that division by 8 games and knock out your hated rivals only a few days later when it matters most, but entirely another to grab the mic and flex box score reminders for the entire world to hear.
The New York Yankees, yeah, the sky was falling. You know, we lost game 2, and he was panicking here. Everybody was like, whoa, it's over. We scored 16 at Yankee Stadium. F*** on it.
How'd that taste? In case you did not hear him, New York, and I know you all did, that's the rookie manager of the world champion Red Sox saying S on it.
F*** on it.
And I don't care who you are or how you feel about the Sox, if you're not a Yankees honk, you got to respect that move. Because there's scoreboard, look up at it, and then there's scoreboard S on it. And scoreboard S on it is about as strong as it gets. I'd be shocked if Alex Cora did not walk right off that bus and sign a lifetime contract the very next second. I would have signed him. But if Alex Cora did not have the line of the day, then this little girl attending the parade did. Listen as the local news asked this girl, who looks no older than 12, who she was hoping to see at the Red Sox parade.
Everyone's very excited. What's your name?
Sarah.
Who do you hope to see today?
Tom Brady.
Oh, well, I don't know if he's going to be around, but we can check.
Now, you've heard of first world problems? Not knowing what local team is having a championship parade in your city is a Boston problem. That's what happens when all you've known your entire life as a little kid is extreme amounts of winning. This little girl is at a Red Sox parade hoping to see Tom Brady. You know how sometimes you wake up and you forget what day it is? Or if you travel, you forget what town you're in? Apparently in Boston, championship parades are so common, you forget what team it is, what sport it is. It's amazing. Some people go their entire life never knowing what a championship parade is like. This little girl has already seen so many, she doesn't even know what championship parade she's at. S on that, world. So that's the cans of beer that fans were throwing at their favorite players. Look, I get it. You want to lob your team an adult beverage and see them crush it. It's a great moment. But maybe get the intended target's attention before drilling them with 12 ounces of suds packed into an aluminum can. Mookie Betts had to literally swat away a Bud Light that nearly hit his mom. Alex Cora was nailed and drenched with an open beer. The legend, Dustin Pedroia, disrespectfully thrown a warm one. Some employee driving a parade vehicle was dotted, and the dude who threw it arrested for assault with a dangerous weapon. And then to top it all off, the World Series trophy was broken when a fan detonated it with a brewski. So maybe chill the hell out with the barrage of beer cans, especially if you're lobbing it and you're up there like Chris Sale, 93, with crazy movement. They're millionaires. They can afford their own pops if they want them. What they can't afford is to get injured by trying to fight them all off. Keep the beers to yourself, or else these guys are going to be riding around in bulletproof glass cages on their duck boats next time. So now we've covered the good. Now we've covered the bad. Let's get to the ugly. Do you remember when the Eagles beat the Pats in the Super Bowl and some nutcase decided to celebrate that by eating horse crap right off the street? Like, you're not a hardcore fan. You're not a real fan until you eat horse crap off the street. Well, apparently Boston wanted to avenge that for some sick, twisted reason. And after a group of onlookers pulled together $38 in cold hard cash, a bro in a backwards snapback bent down, grabbed a pinch of horse dung like it was a plug of cope, and went straight down the hatch with it. Oh my God! If you were wondering what dignity costs, now you know. $38. Oh my God, this is not happening. Oh my God, he is not eating horse crap for $38. Yes, he is. $38 will burn a hole in your pocket for maybe a day. Horse poop will burn a hole in your stomach for a week or more. And a video of you crushing horse poop will burn a hole in your resume for the rest of your life. That's not going away. The internet's in ink, and especially when it comes to guys smashing horse crap for $38. I'd take that $38 and I'd put it into Bitcoin right now and hope for the very best. Because my man, that video is going to follow you around forever. So there's your parade. The good, the bad, the ugly. Alex Cora, the legend. A little girl who doesn't even know where she's at. Beer cans fly. Horse manure gets eaten. Congrats to everybody involved. Every last one of you earned it. I've been around a lot of horse crap. Never eaten any of it. Dwayne Casey coming in. You know, and then any player worth his salt would want the exact same thing, right, Dwayne? I mean, they might not like what you have to say, right, but they want to know exactly where they stand.
Exactly. And that's I think that's where I think each player understands that. I've never seen a player yet that doesn't want more. And like I said, if you want to be a three-point shooter and put that on your roll card, work on it. Get where your shot is consistent, where you're knocking it down. If you want more playing time, get your butt out there and work hard in practice. And when you do get your opportunity in the game, make sure you come in and have an impact. So those roles are not in concrete. They can increase. And if a guy struggles in a certain area in his role, we'll pull it down. Guys accept their roles once everybody understands where they stand on the team and in those roles.
Pistons head coach Dwayne Casey joining us once again. You know, it's a two-way street. You and your staff did your homework on these players, but some of these players did their homework on you, including Ish Smith. He told The Athletic that the moment he heard you were going to be the head coach, he started to study clips from your Toronto teams to get ready. He said early on when you guys spoke, he was asking you about Gary Payton and then how you and the Mavericks went with a couple of point guards in Jason Kidd and J.J. Barea. What were the conversations like for you, and what did it tell you about Ish that he was hitting you with all those topics and questions?
Those are great questions, Jim, and the fact that he did his homework, he understood we ran the same offense that we ran in Dallas and Toronto and close to it, what we call the flow and moving the basketball. So he understood exactly what we were doing, what Jason Kidd did as a point guard, what Gary Payton did as a point guard, what we did in Toronto with Kyle Lowry. He understood that. He had studied that. And he put himself in that same role. He started working on different pick-and-roll actions that we ran in those places. So that just showed me he was dedicated. And, again, I kind of went around to each player this summer talking to each player. And again, Blake Griffin, he was very scientific in his approach to his workouts. He hired a bunch of guys in L.A. to come in and simulate situations. And the reason why his ball handling has gotten so good is the fact that he put himself in those situations, handling the basketball, making decisions, playing more on the perimeter in a controlled environment that he put together. So he came in the season, as a lot of our guys did, prepared and ready to go. Again, our thing is now we under adversity how do we kind of blend in together, get a rhythm, get used to each other, because this group was only together for four games last year under Stan Van Gundy. So we're relatively new to myself and also to each other.
Dwayne Casey joining me for a few more moments. You know, in terms of Blake Griffin, you were saying early on that you were looking to empower him to expand his game, similar to the way that you were able to do with DeMar DeRozan. So what's it been like working with Blake?
It's been great. I tell you what, he's such a competitor. He's a perfectionist. He wants things to be right. He gets himself going. He puts his emotions on his shirt sleeve. But he's made a great transition of handling the basketball and making decisions. You know, the key is now everyone has to kind of accept that and buy into that and accept their roles. And it's, I would say it's tough for Reggie Jackson, because he's been such a dominant point guard with the basketball, down the clutch, down the stretch of games. And now it's the same thing that happened to us in Toronto, taking the ball out of Lowry's hand, putting it into Rosen's hand, is it's a rhythm. He'll get used to it. And, again, it takes time for that to blend in. But when it does, it's going to be a beautiful thing. But Blake has done a heck of a job of running the offense from a point forward position. We even running pick and rolls with him with our big guy. And he's really mastered it well. And also, too, what's improved with him also, Jim, is his three-point shooting. So all that together is going to help us as a team, and now we just got to get everybody else built in and blended in around him.
We're talking to Dwayne Casey. Dwayne, you mentioned Gary Payton. He's going to be on my podcast next week, and I haven't spoken to the Glove in a little while, but I can remember when I came up, he was one of the first guys I interviewed on TV. Man, there was just something different about the Glove. He was a really, really different cat, and point guards are anyway. What made him different, and how would you, and you've been around some of the best to ever do it. Yeah. How would you compare him to some of the best that you've been around?
Jim, one thing with Gary, he's such a competitor, and he's street smart. Gary is such his basketball IQ was off the charts. George would be sitting there talking to the team, and Gary would be kind of looking out the window, looking around, and act like he's not paying attention. And he could repeat verbatim what George would say. So his basketball IQ, his understanding of exactly what was going on the court, what he had to do, we used him in the low post in Seattle at the time. But he knew every job of each player on the floor, what they had to do, where they should be, a lot like LeBron James. I think, you know, LeBron reminds me a lot of Gary, talking on the floor, telling everybody where to go, knowing everybody's job. So he was a basketball savant on the floor, along with his toughness, and that's a great combination.
It's kind of that Bay Area thing, right? That Oakland Bay Area.
Funny, Jim, because you know, talking to Jason Kidd, Jason idolized Gary growing up, and all those guys are from that Bay Area and those point guards. And you look at Damon Lillard, all those guys. You know, it's something about the water in Oakland that is good for point guards.
Like my man Brian Shaw from UC Santa Barbara.
Oh, yes.
J.R. Ryder, right?
Yes. Bunch of guys.
Dwayne Casey, head basketball coach at Detroit, and he is an NBA coach of the year. Had a great, great run in Toronto and doing his thing with Detroit. Dwayne, so good to have you back. Always appreciate you and the conversation. Great talking basketball with you, Coach.
Anytime, Jim, and have fun. And anytime you want to call, love to talking with you.
That's a heck of an intro.
So that's how I feel about it.
What's cracking? Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. It is awesome to be with you on a Monday. Had a great weekend commute, LA to New York and back to LA. Great time. And now I'm back in SoCal with a lot to get done. Boston Red Sox are your world champions.
World champion!
Yeah! Boston was the tougher team. Boston was way more clutch. That's why they're world champions. And now the franchise, it couldn't win jack forever. It's now won it all four times in the last 15 years. How you like them apples? Jack, up in NoCal.
I would pay $1 million to get into a room with Clayton Kershaw and spray him in the face with a full can of mace.
None of you have $1 million.
Cal Ripken, fuck.
Email.
We are the champions. Take your silicone-filled cheeks and chest and blow it out your pant legs, losers.
Hashtag
National Cat Day. Sean Merriman joins me in studios. The World Bare Knuckle Fighting Federation.
Yeah.
What do you like about this?
You know, I'm from PG County, Maryland. This is Holly my first.
You've been in fights before?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I throw down a little
bit. He's got a lane. He slows down. He stays inbounds, and he's
nobody gives a damn about your bad beat. Like nobody gives a damn how girly just did you.
Forget fantasy and forget Vegas.
He doesn't care about you winning your bet. He cares about winning a game for his team.
How about Todd Gurley?
We're joined by Dave Winfield.
Bad guys throwing with great velocity.
intent. I'm sorry. Hopefully someone else will pick up the other line.
Man, only a few weeks back, I was calling the Browns America's team.
Move over, Jerry Jones. Cleveland Browns are America's team.
And I meant it. But when it goes fast. I don't want to say this, but Cleveland, you suck again.
Suck it, you suck. I owe her an apology. I think he's kind of a...
You brought it all back. You brought it all back and made it 10 times worse. Do not pick fights that you cannot win. Especially, do not pick fights with NBA Twitter.
It's a platform for people that are sitting home drawing an unemployment check, sitting in front of a keyboard.
I mean, I don't know if anything will run down fat, but Gundy making that sound during that presser on Saturday may be the next best thing.
Touchdown!
The Patriots are the obvious winners, and the poor refs who have to dribble sex toys off the field with their feet are the obvious losers. If this team were competitive, the Bills Mafia would be using their sex toys the way they're supposed to be used and not throwing them on the field. Jalen Ramsey.
It's a little frustrating not being where we thought we would be as a team, but it's perfect for us because our bye comes directly in the midpoint of our season. Really optimistic about in these other eight games.
Talking about the tacos and taking a 99-minute dump. Man, we're not going to do that.
A pack of chipupas.
If you're over the age of 12 and dress up for Halloween, you're a grade A, world-class loser.
Mike Mitchell is my guest. Le'Veon's teammates.
To answer your question, should another man be speaking about someone else's money? No. But to talk about the character of those guys, I know that they legitimately care about one another. I think sometimes, you know, the media can, you know what they do.
This is RPO.
That's easy. I mean, I think a blind man can see that. Green Bay in a thumper. Easily Green Bay covered.
The Packers have come from behind to win.
Email. Rome, thank God the pot is free. Because Trevor isn't worth the price. Tommy A.B. Lewis coming up this weekend, UFC 230.
Let me correct that. I want to fight a bull. I just have to measure which one means more to me right now.
Can you measure that yet? Do you know the answer to that question?
You know, competitively, obviously, it's Jones, but financially, you know, Lesnar brings a dollar.
We believe that Coach Durkin has been unfairly blamed for the
dysfunction. A 19-year-old kid is dead, but the coach who oversaw the culture, which produced that, is the victim? And if it sounds like I'm pissed, it's because I am. And I'm shocked that everybody's not. Gardner Minshew is my guest.
The power of the sash is unparalleled. It has a life of its own.
Who are some of the mustaches that came before you that you respect?
The greatest of all time of mustaches, my personal icon, Burt Reynolds. Rest in peace. He is the gold standard when it comes to mustaches.
Pretty scary stuff, right? If you want to be left undisturbed tonight, drop that mix on your phone. Get connected to a Bluetooth speaker. Blast that thing out on your front doorstep. Nobody comes within 50 feet of your house.
But a phantom pregnancy is actually a real pregnancy, but you have
is
a phantom.
Is Ghosty happy? Casper's always happy.
If you ever get invited to another smack-off, how about not using your dumb phone?
Email.
You're looking at a high of 50. I'm looking at a guy of 73. Miss American Pie. How's that going to work? When you're 70, he's going to be 120. Wait a minute, Rome. What's up? Look at a calendar, Rome. It's not Friday. It's Thursday. It is not Friday. Well, it is for me, clones. At about 4 a.m., a couple of times a week, I'm getting these crazy cramps in my calf. Like, I feel like I took a shotgun blast to my calf. Someone call someone! Because Rome is walking around with a limp.
You know, you could just have to take a big dump.
There it is.
Yeah, a big dump.
I knew he'd
pants.
Pay it off at some point.
He's looking down and saying, why do you guys take so many stupid three-point shots, and why are you trying to play so fast?
Sincerely.
Normal-ass regular person.
Cody the Ragdoll.
No sh- I got a lozenge, bitch.
Sucker-free 2019.
Should I say in contrast?
Your ass will be mine.
It's a mic drop right there.
Weber, be careful. Be really
Brad.
Careful.
Appreciate it, Jim.
Four of them, I didn't even have to show up.
Can't thank you enough for the friendship.
Have a nice day.
Have a nice day.
Damn, Alvin, why don't you grow up?
Good night now! Good night now!